Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday, the 28th of November. Very nice to have you with us today. Hope you had a lovely holiday weekend. It's good to be back in the saddle after a couple of days off, and hopefully you had a lovely time as well. You can join us, panel at WAMC.org, to get in on the conversation, panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our panel to you, and we'll get started. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
Oh, why don't you put this in front of you?
Oh, yeah, okay. That anyway, I'll say, good morning, Joe. Oh,
there you go. And Rosemary Armeo joins us. She is the director of the journalism program at UAlbany.
Good morning. Hello.
How are you? And political consultant Libby Post. Good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great.
All right. Everybody's pounding away here at their keyboard, so I assume we're getting ready for the big show, writing out their comments.
No, we don't. No.
No.
Really.
No. No. Not scripting it? All right. Good.
No, oh, God forbid.
All right.
I don't think you have to convince anyone of that.
Yeah, right.
let's start off with the news of the weekend. A lot happened while we were away. Let's start with the death of Fidel Castro. Of course, 90 years old, and it's been, you know, we've kind of, I think, been expecting for a very long time. But the news was confirmed, of course, over the weekend that Fidel Castro died at the age of 90, and very different approaches, I guess, in how the response from our president, President Obama, as compared to the president-elect of one of, you know, of being, I think, in the Obama page, being respectful yet pointing out some of the concerns and issues over the years, to put it mildly, versus the first Donald Trump tweet, which was Fidel Castro is dead.
I thought it would be who's Fidel Castro.
So what do you make of this, and what does this mean for our future relations with Cuba? Who would like to begin?
Well, I will. I'm close to the microphone here. I think it might be a good thing in that Trump up to now has been saying he wanted to refreeze relations, undo what Obama has done. And the death of Fidel Castro might be just the excuse that he needs. Not as if he needs an excuse to change his mind, but it might be just the opening he needs to say, okay, let's really see. This is a new era. Let's see what we can do.
Or how long will it be, put another way, before there's a Trump hotel in Cuba?
Right.
Good point.
That's really the issue. This is the selling of the White House. Well, you know, there was a book that was the selling of the president. This is now the selling of the White House.
So let us. I just want to keep on Castro for a moment.
Okay,
if I may.
Look, Marx talked about the dictatorship of the proletariat. You know what happens is you get one guy, the Chinese, get into power and they never get out and they never allow another election. Not a real election, and there's no peaceful transference of power. They just stay in power. Castro did that, too. Castro kept his political enemies in jail, no question about it. On the other hand, the United States, 11 presidents tried to do away with Castro one way or another. Everything from exploding cigars, you know, to
making his beard fall out.
Yeah, and to setting him up with women, I understand, and all, trying to do all of that. Look. So those were extraordinary moves on the part of this country, and his reaction was, okay, the ends justify the means. I'm trying to bring health care to this island. I'm trying to make things more equal for everybody, and it was a bit of a disaster. Look, let's face it. But when the United States tried to invade under Kennedy, it was a joke. There was no popular uprising, which he had said the president had been led to believe would happen, and it never happened. So, and in Florida, which becomes an extraordinarily important piece of this puzzle, it is Florida which rules the nation in terms of the state that both political parties need. And all of a sudden, you get Obama who says, you know, I'm going to make peace over there. I'm going to make this thing happen. And the young people, the young Cubans come out and prove that they're different from the old Cubans. So, and we want this homeland. So all of that figures into the puzzle.
Rosemary?
I don't know that there's more to add. I was amused by the reaction to his death. Justin Trudeau in Canada called him a great leader and took all kinds of internet heat for that, which is, I mean, great does not mean good, and I'm not sure that he meant it that way, but there's no question that he had an extraordinary life. I think one thing that will change definitely for Cubans now is not having the United States as the big boogeyman to the north. Castro was able to blame a whole lot of everything that went wrong in his regime. He could just blame it on the Americans. And that held Cuba together for a long time. That's gone now. So we're going to see some big changes, I think, in what's happening in the government. Don't forget Raul, his brother, quite elderly himself.
And he's pledged to step down in, 2018?
Yes, he did.
An extraordinary list of people who could take over, many of whom were in their 50s.
Yeah,
correct.
Well, the thing is whether or not they're actually going to move to a democracy and have elections and a free market.
There's been no indication whatever under Raul, and it really has been like 10 years, that they want to give up political power. It's economic. Economically, they want to change, but there's not been any move to loosen up things politically. So I wouldn't count on that.
I don't know if they can
do both. And then, of course, you have the Trump administration, which is likely to call for all kinds of political reforms, which aren't going to happen. So it may not thaw as quickly as we would like.
And the question is, are we going back to the old way? In other words,
empire building?
Well, the empire building on our part, or as we know, Michael met with the mafia up on
right.
As anybody who follows this stuff. So,
no matter how hard I try, I just can't get out.
Okay, now we're doing Godfather imitations.
Not good. All right, so let's move on to another topic, which is, the recount. Let us talk about the recount.
Yeah, that's a good one.
What started on a story right before we left on Wednesday, that Jill Stein, you may remember, is the Green Party candidate, started to say that she was looking for 1 million, then 2 million, then 3 million, then 5 million, then 7 million, which she got, to do recounts in three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. All states that were very close, and in the electoral vote, saying that there appeared of people with computer proficiency, found some question marks that they wanted to look to answer. And you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but to my knowledge, they never used the term irregularities. There was some information that didn't seem to be there that perhaps should be, and they wanted to look further into it. Okay, so she says we're going to start. Then this gets up a pretty good head of steam. Money starts rolling in. They start the process. I believe the process starts today in Wisconsin. Then we heard late Saturday that Hillary Clinton, who had poo-pooed the whole thing, said that she was going to, that the campaign was going to oversee.
Had she really poo-pooed the whole thing? She hadn't said anything
about it.
She hadn't said anything, and she didn't seem like she wanted to really engage.
She didn't want to engage, although one of the lawyers said that
they had been looking.
They had been looking, and they said that they didn't see anything. What I want to ask you then is because certainly the president came out and said that he didn't see the need for it, which that came out about 4 or 5 hours prior to the announcement of the Clinton campaign saying that they were going to continue. And meanwhile, and again, please correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but all parties involved, meaning Jill Stein and Hillary Clinton, both say that they don't expect this to change anything. And yet it goes on, and that just started up Donald Trump and the Twitter war once again.
Seems to me that if huge numbers of Americans are unhappy with this election, and I'm Donald Trump, I would want a recount just so that everybody was sure that the thing hadn't been stolen. That's all. Why in the world would he not want to do that?
Except that he doesn't care. And he's, you know, we keep going back to, well, this is the way it should be done. It's none of this is how
it should have been done.
So he doesn't really care about what people think.
But, well, here's what scares the hell out of me.
That we could have won.
Well, no, what really scares me is that when he writes a tweet, the series of tweets that he has, I'm afraid not about this election. I think Trump has won. I think we're going to have to live with it. That's unfortunate from my perspective. Nevertheless, I want to make sure that the peaceful transference of power in the future doesn't get taken away from the American people. And when he tells a terrible lie, like, I know I really won this election, and that because there were illegal voters, I lost the popular vote.
Yeah, I lost the popular vote by 2 million votes because
2.2 million votes
because of illegal votes.
Well, okay, what that indicates to me is that he is willing to play around with reality. I'll tell you who else has played around with reality in the past: Adolf Hitler, Mao Zedong,
Fidel Castro.
They play around. They make their own realities. So you get to the end of these 4 years. Then what happens when he says, no, because the system is so rigged, we have to keep it. We have to keep me in office.
Wow. I think that his series of tweets, as they always are a diversion. And I think what he really wants to divert from is his business. However, I love that there's a recount. I also don't think it'll change anything. But we have allegations of fraud that could be the basis for even worse voter suppression than we've seen in this election. It would be very nice to clear that up so that we can say, no, we don't need these terrible laws. And second is that I have been, from the beginning, I repeat this, concerned about hacking by the Russians. And they're not irregularities, but the weird things that Jill Stein wants to look at involve hacking into the system. I think we should be looking at that.
Why does it cost money?
Meaning, you have to pay people to do the counting.
Right.
So
it's on the candidate then to pay them?
Yes. Yeah, because
she's raising the money.
Right. The Board of Elections in each state has done their job and they're certifying the vote. If somebody wants to go back in,
then it's on their dime.
Right. There's a certain number that if it's below that number, the state would pay for it because it's a mandated recount. But they didn't reach that. I mean, she lost in Wisconsin by over 10,000. I think it's 10,700 votes, which is above the level that you need for
the other thing
state paid for.
Is that nobody not embattled, embargoed or whatever it is, whatever you do to the ballot machines. Nobody that the night of the election did the legal maneuvering you need to do to close down those machines until a further examination of them all. We used to do it all the time here in Albany, you know, with the old lever machines.
Mm-hmm.
And so that process wasn't put into place early enough.
That's interesting.
What I find bizarre is Jill Stein bashing Hillary Clinton.
I was
in a tweet.
My next question.
I just don't get it.
It seems as though that the only person this helps in the end
is
Hillary Clinton. If any information is found that there are irregularities and there has been something wrong.
Well, doesn't Stein get helped if there's more votes that go to the Green Party than are counted?
Well,
she helps to get.
Yes,
she
gets
financing.
Her ballot position. Well,
yeah,
and her
ballot
position.
Well,
right.
Pardon me. I'll tell you, Joe, who it helps. It helps Jill Stein. But it doesn't help her because she has a chance of getting more votes. It helps her because all of a sudden she's on everybody's lips as the third-party candidate. Now, wait a second. If she's the third-party candidate, she doesn't want to say anything good about Hillary Clinton because she's one of the good old people.
Then don't take Hillary's help. If you're going to be that way, don't take Hillary's help.
Well, that's easy for you to say, Libby.
Well,
but I'm telling you, I understand the motivation for Stein doing this stuff. She wants to be seen as a third-party candidate worth voting for the next time.
Although I would think at that point you say it would be very nice to, you know, we welcome all people who are interested in in making sure that, that democracy worked in these three states.
But we keep hearing from people who are writing, I'm sorry, Rosemary, we keep hearing from people who are writing to us all the time saying, we need more third parties in the United States. This should be, we should establish a third party. It doesn't help Jill Stein to be supported by a Democrat because she wants it clear that she's starting this third party movement, and that's why she bashes Clinton.
I just don't think this is a partisan issue. The integrity of the American electoral system is of interest to all of us. So are if there's fraud, if Trump is right, then we need to figure out what the fraud is and how it's happening. If the hacking is occurring, we need to figure that out. How? What kind of machines are being used? Right. Where's the hacking occurring? Is it indeed plausible? We do not know the answers, and we're screaming at each other, like who's right and who's wrong and whose motive is what. What we should be doing is collecting evidence. It just seems really easy.
So meanwhile, we talked about Jill Stein's tweet. We should note that Donald Trump said that he believed that it was a scam and that Jill Stein was doing this to line her own pockets.
Yeah, and then he comes out with what he, you know, what you alluded to before, is saying that the system is rigged. I really won the popular vote. I mean,
crazy.
You can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He is a master of having it both ways. And eventually the people are going to be like, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
and
but
we need to stop reading his tweets and making them news. We really have to do that as
and that's the
press.
The media's issue.
Yep.
The media has to ignore that. And one would think that as he becomes president, the people around him will say, do not do this anymore. They took away his account at the end of the campaign. You can't run a government. You can't do foreign policy. You can't do domestic policy. You shouldn't by
he's,
a series
he's done
of tweets.
Pretty well playing by his own rules.
That's
the point
that's
I was going to make.
Yeah.
President
yeah.
is going to be the president.
He said he's going to redefine in not a good way.
But see, I mean, you're a communications consultant, so and we have about a minute. But okay, so this is the new way. Instead of putting out a press release on letterhead,
absolutely
you put out
true.
A tweet.
Yeah.
I mean, what difference does it make?
Exactly
I mean,
right.
I don't see why you don't report on those.
Far more interesting to me was watching Kellyanne this weekend.
Oh, I want to talk to you about that.
Do you want to do
let's
do
wait.
This?
Okay. Well, hold on, because okay. I do not understand this. My little Joe brain just can't figure this one out.
Talk about communication misfires everywhere, or maybe planned. Maybe they're not misfires. That was bizarre to me.
Okay, so we're talking about Kellyanne Conway and her reaction on the Sunday, I believe all of the Sunday.
All of them.
to
she
Mitt
was
Romney.
Everywhere.
About Mitt Romney. So we'll pick up that and talk about much more. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post make up the group, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to those in just a minute. As we promised before we went to break, we're going to talk about the Kellyanne Conway story, and we were very good during the break. We didn't discuss it. We saved it for the show.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I said before the break that I've read and read and read about this, and I just don't quite understand it. So one of the president-elect's top advisors went on just about all of the Sunday morning talk shows yesterday saying that supporters across the country feel betrayed that Donald Trump is considering one of his most vicious critics, Mitt Romney, for Secretary of State. Kellyanne Conway said, I'm all for party unity, but I'm not sure we have to pay for that with the Secretary of State position. She added, it's just breathtaking in scope and intensity, the type of messages I've received from all over the country, the number of people who feel betrayed to think that Governor Romney would get the most prominent cabinet post after he went so far out of his way to hurt Donald Trump. Now, this is curious because Donald Trump was the one who invited him
right.
to come to speak
come
about,
to Jersey.
The, about right. the position. And he was the one who asked him to be interviewed. So I guess the only person she's really going after in this, besides Mitt Romney, would be her boss, right?
I think it's my theory on this is Reince Priebus.
Reince Priebus.
I'll never pronounce his name right, I'm afraid.
Okay.
But he's the one pushing for party unity. Bring in Mitt. This is the way to heal the party. And so Trump went along with it, but doesn't really like the idea. I can't imagine him not wanting Rudy in there. We even have George Pataki, of all things, testifying for Rudy Giuliani today. And so now this is his way to fight that. I think he and Kellyanne work hand in glove, and that she would not be doing this to thwart or fight him. She wants to set it up so he has a reason not to pick him. And I never thought Mitt Romney was going to be Secretary of State.
I think it's also a smokescreen on the other, as the tweets are a smokescreen, this is a smokescreen on the other appointments, like Betsy
DeVos. Oh my goodness.
You know, who's, you know, they're saying that we have to break the cartel of public education. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I agree with Rosemary that, and I said so in my morning commentary. So, no, I did. And if you, you know, no, forget that part of it. But
I didn't copy you. I didn't mean to anyway.
I don't think you did.
Okay.
In all honesty, I don't think you did. But I do think this woman is not going to for a single second challenge her boss, which to me means she's doing what she's told.
So
unless there's been a falling out between Trump and Kellyanne herself, in which Kellyanne now goes over to the Blue Meanies or to the right wing and says, okay, since I'm not getting, because there's been no announcement about her role.
Right, she's not the press secretary.
So to your point, so this morning, MSNBC is reporting the two sources at the top of the Donald Trump transition team confirmed that they spoke to the president-elect and that Donald Trump was, quote, furious at Kellyanne Conway's comments Sunday, suggesting Trump betrayed his supporters by even considering Mitt Romney. Kellyanne went rogue at Donald Trump's expense at the worst possible time, the source familiar with Trump's thinking told MSNBC. Trump's top aide said that they were baffled by Conway's comments and suggested that it feeds into a growing concern inside the campaign that instead of driving Donald Trump's message, she is pushing her own agenda. The top transition aide said it's dangerous.
Do you guys remember the end of Miracle on 34th Street, the good one, the first one? When the lawyer and the daughter and the wife-to-be are all in the house, and they see Santa Claus's
cane
there
in the corner,
and says, "I'm a great lawyer," and then he sees it and he says, "Maybe,
maybe I'm not so great after all."
Maybe we don't know. The maybe could be that this whole scenario is made up garbage, so that Trump has an out.
It's spectacle.
Yes. Okay, I'll go with the spectacle, but the out is you never had to get in, right? I mean, you could just say we considered him. That one seems easy to me. We considered him. He's one of many on our list, and we'll see what happens. But that dissension in the ranks thing seems like it's.
But Joe, you're already trouncing your chief of staff. Who wants Mitt to come as a bridge to the regular Republicans?
So does Mike Pence wants him too.
That's right.
So
therefore,
plus it's an Obama move, right?
What'd you
because
say?
Isn't that what Obama did? He brought in a rival,
a team of rivals.
Right. Yeah.
Well, he brought in a team of rivals.
Obama can think.
But I am loath to think that Kellyanne Conway is out there doing her own thing.
She never has.
No.
She never has. We've not seen a sign of it, Alan.
So,
you're right.
So two things. One is Steve Bannon and Ryan Priebus, according to this source at MSNBC, have reportedly been growing frustrated by Conway's failure to become a team player in a transition process where the top players are forming a tight-knit group around the president-elect. Conway, who responded to MSNBC via text this morning, denied the report, saying it is all false and sexist.
Whoa, playing that card, huh?
Oh, my goodness.
That's an interesting card.
I love Kellyanne Conway. I love watching her. I want a book about her.
Really? I've always...
You know how I feel about that. Yeah.
Who knows?
Somebody
needs to be the fly on the wall and with a microphone.
And the truth is, you have just uttered a mouthful. We do not know.
Right, we don't know. And we will never know, and that's the problem.
Oh, no, I think we might know.
What, in 20 years when somebody writes a book?
Can you imagine the tell-all of the Trump campaign?
Trump presidency.
She said, she went on to say about her role in the transition, I can have any job I want. May stay outside to take the Plouffe role, meaning David Plouffe.
In other words, make some money.
Right. The campaign manager for Barack Obama. And may stay outside to take that role and run the political operation. Trump wants me by his side. So
I think that's true. I mean, the evidence up to now has been exactly that. She has been a loyal and extremely efficient worker for him. I think she's got a role in this little drama, too.
So meanwhile, who gets the Secretary of State nod? So will it be Rudy?
My money's still on Rudy.
Yeah.
Well, I think Rudy's a terrible mistake. First of all, because I don't see him as a rational human being anymore. I think he may have been once when he was the mayor, but I think he's off the wall. He's bouncing off the walls right now.
And can he be confirmed?
Can't disagree.
Well, that's a good point because there's so much stuff out there. I wanted to say the words which started with S, but I knew I couldn't,
no.
So I changed that to
stuff.
S. There's stuff. So much stuff out there that you can believe that stuff. People will be channeling stuff into the Democrats, who, after all, will be on the committee and will be asking those questions.
I mean, Mitt would be easier to get through, correct?
Oh, without question.
Mitt would be no problem, probably, but
without
I don't know, Rudy. You don't think he'll get through? It's a Republican body. He has a long history. It's, even you just said, I think he's kind of nutty now, not rational, but he has a long history, including through 9/11, where he was quite revered.
How many votes did they need? Do they need 60?
Yeah.
Okay, so they need some Democrats.
Oh, wait a second now.
No, well, that's interesting.
That's interesting.
Court,
yeah. You know, I know that the nuclear option was changed. So the only way you needed the 60 for confirmation was the Supreme Court. But the lower courts were 50-51, you know, whatever you need it. Now, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish I knew. Somebody will tell us
we'll
about
have to
the
look
confirmation.
This up, yeah.
So is the there have been some that suggested, and I saw this before this latest brouhaha this morning, but I saw yesterday many people saying that this was a Trump way of humiliating Mitt Romney. Are there easier ways of doing that, though?
Nah.
Not for Trump. It's all got to be public and in the press.
People are making this stuff up.
Yeah, mm. I don't know. It just seems weird. But I guess we'll find out.
Well, if you humiliated him, you humiliate all those people that Priebus and the others and Pence want to have a bridge to. So that doesn't make a lot of sense.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go to letters. Alan has a stack in front of him, so we'll get to those. And we'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. As promised, we have your letters that you have written to panel at wamc.org, panel at wamc.org. And Alan has a stack in front of him, and we go to those now.
Here we go. We already had a couple of letters saying, why aren't you talking about Fidel Castro? We did talk about Fidel Castro.
At the top of the hour.
We led the show with Fidel Castro.
I mean, I love the idea that somebody turns on the radio at any given moment and assumes that because we're talking about something else, we haven't talked about, you know, their subject.
Is there something we should have said that we didn't?
No, I don't think.
About Castro?
No,
I think
we got.
Well, here's for Bob in Albany. I was in Cuba last October, saw the wall that surrounds the 1,000-plus acre compound where Castro lived. Anybody who thinks that Castro embodied the socialist ideal of universal equality and shared suffering and reward is kidding themselves. However he started out, by the end he was nothing but a self-enriching dictator, and most of the young Cubans I met could hardly wait for him to go and for the country to open up. Okay, isn't this an incredibly weird way to run the government, says Allison, and she is quoting Donald J. Trump from 21 minutes ago. If Cuba is willing to make a better deal for the Cuban people, the Cuban-American people, and the U.S. as a whole, I will terminate the deal, beating the opening that we have made. Michael says, hey, Alan, you were pretty prescient about the election of you-know-who. As a political scientist, do you think he will last through the first term? I have no idea. I could tell you what my desire would be in that case, but no, I have no idea whatsoever. And Bruce said what I said earlier, coming soon, Trump hotels in Havana, Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And Margaret says, I recently returned from a trip to Cuba. I found the people to be overwhelmingly supportive of their government. The dissident artists still glorify the revolution, and the tourist economy is flourishing in a very, very creative ways and is benefiting the populace. Cuisine, art, and music are superb, and the Cubans are the friendliest and most considerate I have ever encountered in my travels.
Right. Do you know how many dissidents have left Cuba? There's a reason. There's a friendliness towards the Castros there.
Could be.
Well, it's been, could what, be, 50
but,
years?
Know, as yeah. I said before. So,
it's generational.
Yeah.
That's all they grew up with.
Well... And then Laura says Trump is a perfect fit for the USA. He's crass, belligerent, ignorant, tasteless, and money obsessed. He's the embodiment of your. Now this is interesting.
Yeah, where's that person from?
I don't know. She doesn't say your country's true character. You may take the rest of us down with you, but I love watching your horrid nation rip itself apart.
Oh, charming. Thank you very much.
Where's I think person from? That,
it doesn't say where she's from, but having lived in many horrible places, governments are separate from people. That's a really, I'm sorry, I know you don't like us to say this, but that's a really ignorant sentiment. All Americans are not like that.
Well, even you're on the panel, you're allowed to say anything you want.
Even if we do vote for a man who may fit some of those
characteristics.
You know,
this is not all of us did not vote for this man.
Yeah.
The overwhelming majority of us did not vote for this man. Yeah. So
enjoy our wonderful country while you're here.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
and the right to write.
I still love our country. I just don't like its.
Well, they could be streaming us from
leader.
Elsewhere too. We don't know, but
well, that's a good point, Joe.
Yeah,
I take it. You're right. Joe says I have a place in my heart for the Greens, but they are perpetually aiming the wrong way. They should spend their $6 million studying and reporting how all those new swing state voting restrictions suppress the minority vote, and that's from Joe. And that, my dear friend, Joe, other Joe, is what I've got.
All right. Let's go to another topic then and talk about other stuff. I do want to get real quick back to the this whole idea of the popular vote, because we were talking about the recount, but we didn't talk about Donald Trump and saying, I won the popular vote if you deduct the millions of people who voted illegally. So... again, this is something, as we believe, and Alan mentioned this before, that there seems to be absolutely no evidence of.
No,
right.
No. Look, this scares the hell out of me, because he's making stuff up now. And to what end is he making this stuff up? We already know that he said during the campaign, I think this is going to be a rigged election. So he won.
Right.
Rigged or not, right?
Right.
He won. And now we're not hearing too much about a rigged election anymore.
Except.
Now we're talking about a rigged recount. But why did he do, why is he saying this stuff? Because I'm scared to death that in 4 years he turns around and says, because it's all rigged in my mind, I'm not going to let it go forward. I'm going to keep myself here.
I understand where you're coming from.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if he can actually do that. you know? I mean, I think in some of our most paranoid musings about what
just
this presidency...
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean
they're not out to get you. I know. But in some of our more paranoid musings about this presidency, you can go down that road. But the fact of the matter is we still live in a democracy. This is not the Weimar Republic of the 1920s.
Not yet.
I get that, Alan, but I don't think we'll get there either.
Okay.
That's the thing.
First of all, you're probably right, and I want to agree with you.
Okay,
but
good.
Let me ask you this. What if the guy's really nuts?
He is really nuts. It's not what if. Narcissist. He's a textbook narcissist.
And therefore sees himself... And by the way, I apologize.
It's because
I apologize to all the mental health professionals who are going to write me using that
right.
word.
It's this. Paul Ryan wants to be president. Those other Republicans want power, too. They're not going to let him take all the power and
they
just
have so far.
Well, but in 4 years, they see their turn. And they're not going to let that. They're not going to let him get in the way of that.
So I just want to read this because this is the rationale, all right?
Okay.
So as we talk about this, this is the rationale.
Rationale would be a good thing.
Well, it's his rationale, but it's a rationale. In addition to winning the Electoral College in a landslide, I won the popular vote if you deduct the millions of people who voted illegally. It would have been much easier for me to win the so-called popular vote than the Electoral College in that I would only campaign in 3 or 4 states instead of the 15 states mm-hmm. that I visited. I would have won even more easily and convincingly, but smaller states are forgotten.
Okay, so my question to all of you, based on the mental health question that I had, is does he believe that?
Yes.
Or does
I think so.
Does he believe
he does.
That? If he believes it, woe is us.
Yes, he believes it, and he might even be right, Alan.
What?
If he were going after the popular vote, he could have gotten more votes in the Rust Belt. He could have gotten them in upstate New York. He could have gotten them in rural California.
He got them in Staten Island.
But I don't
exactly.
Think, well, of course he
did. He may be right.
But I don't think you heard what Joe read. He was saying basically, I went to more states than I needed to in order to win this election.
Because he was playing by electoral college rules.
Yes.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's saying his strategy would have been different if he was going after the popular vote. And I believe he is right.
You believe he's right, what? That he had
that he played a strategy to win the electoral college.
Oh, well, it's possible.
If there were no electoral college, he would have played by different rules and might very well have won the popular vote.
But he didn't win the popular vote.
He didn't have to.
Well,
he doesn't have to.
Look, there are those. Look, it's obviously sticking in his craw,
right?
That he didn't win the popular vote.
Right, he likes to win. You're right about that.
Which is why he is tweeting and saying he could have, would have, should have, if he had done all of this. It's really because now he's bringing in a right wing government. He's appointing people like Jeff Sessions and other people, despite the fact that the majority of the country voted for Hillary Clinton. There's no two ways about that. So it's really sticking in his craw. How am I going to shove all this stuff down the throats of the American people if, in fact, I lost a popular vote? So that's my issue.
I just think he is obsessed with winning. He's extremely competitive. Mm-hmm. That's something that served him well in this election. And that, he's making noise about it now. But it doesn't matter. He won by the rules that are in place. And he doesn't need a mandate. He's got the whole mechanism of the U.S. federal government at his beck and call.
Well, that, of course, raises the entire thing, which everybody's writing to me about, which is the rules. He won by the rules. And that the rules are corrupt. That you have created an electoral college system. I used to tell my students that the day that the people who, if somebody ever won the electoral college without winning the, how naive I was,
right,
without winning the popular vote, people would be out on the streets with pots and pans by the millions.
Well, it's happened five times now in history, and the system isn't corrupt. It was set up for goals that may no longer apply. The idea is that if you're in Minnesota or Wyoming, you don't count for anything because you'd just be overpowered by New York and California and Texas. And so the system was set up where the smaller states.
It wasn't even in California.
Yeah, but the thing is, you still don't count because you get four votes. You get four electoral votes compared to New York's 30.
Minnesota, a vote in Minnesota actually carries four times the weight of a vote in New York because you have control over your electors.
So you're arguing, let me get this straight, Rosie.
I'm not arguing that it's right. I hate the electoral college system.
However,
it is not corrupt. It was set up for a specific purpose. We now, as a people, have to decide whether that purpose is out of date.
Well,
and I don't think we're going to see it.
You know, Rosemary,
there's
legal corruption and there's moral corruption. And if you want to argue with me that it's not legally corrupt, you're right. If you want to argue with me that somehow democracy has not been perverted because of the existence of the Electoral College, I think you're wrong.
I'm not so sure about that either. I think there is some merit to making sure that people who live in rural areas have a say in government. That's what this election has been about. Working class people, by number, did not have the power to make themselves heard. And because of the system, they are now going to be heard. I think they're going to regret what they're hearing, mm-hmm. but they have made themselves felt. And is that not the essence of a democracy, that everybody gets a chance?
Yeah, but does everybody get an equal chance in a democracy? I mean, when you get things like the gerrymander, which play a huge part in the way the House of Representatives is now composed and stuff. And when
situation.
Wait.
Situation, Alan. That is corrupt. But different than the
electoral college.
Well,
I'm glad you're sitting on your throne, able to tell us which piece of corruption is more corrupt than the other one. You're not answering?
No.
It was the throne comment.
What?
The throne comment.
Oh.
It was a little condescending.
Not at all.
What,
totally.
You think she's a queen?
Not at all. It wasn't condescending one bit. It was as if
condescension is in the ears of the hearer.
Well, there are days that I really have issues with both of you on this issue. As soon as I make a point and win it, the outcomes.
And
the
we all know
outcomes,
you like Donald outcomes, Trump.
Outcomes the sexist.
And part. You like Donald Trump just likes to win.
I'm feeling for Kellyanne Conway.
Are
right
you now?
Yeah, sexist. Yeah, yeah. I get that.
All right. Why don't we take a break?
Yeah, I think we better.
Okay,
we can work on our.
Human dynamics.
Yes, I was going to say the relationships and the dynamics in the room, yes. We'll be right back. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. panel@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel. And let me reintroduce the panel to you. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post. We welcome your comments as well. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And we will start with some letters and then we'll move on to some other topics as well.
Thanks, Joe. Kat writes, you kind of left off the ableist slur with a pretend apology to all the mental health professionals who are going to write. Here's one of them. That was icky. Donald isn't mentally ill. Let me read that sentence again. Donald isn't mentally ill. He's simply a product of our time and place in history, a man who has never had to work a real job in his life, who has nevertheless been told he's great all his life because he's wealthy, and this culture values wealth. Nuts really is an ableist slur, and so is the knee-jerk need to diagnose anyone we don't like with some form of mental illness. Please do better, and says, P.S., love the show. Okay, thank you, Kat. And Ellen says, I want to be supportive of the peaceful transition of power. Totally believe in this, but can't help feeling we're about to make a terrible mistake, turning our nation over to this man who has no respect for truth or the rule of law, more afraid for the nation every day. Robin says, one thing I've learned about all the comforting predictions I've heard made about Trump, they never come true. P.S. Trump is delusional. And mendacious meaning he's a liar, right? Yeah, okay,
yes.
Right. The scariest thing, 60% of the voters, including 23% of Trump voters, believe Trump is not competent to be president. Go figure. Well, too late for that.
Yeah.
Chuck says, you said that Trump's goal is to pull focus from the conflict with his businesses. You said that his tweets should be ignored. Yet you cannot manage to move forward in any way which is true to your words. Okay, let me see if I can unbollocks that sentence. Yet you cannot manage to move forward in a way which is true to your words.
In other words, we're still paying too much attention to his tweets and to his...
I hope you can get there and sooner rather than later. I don't see, ladies and gentlemen, how you ignore what the President of the United States or the incoming President of the United States has to say. Sorry. If you believe in journalism, if you believe in the First Amendment, you can't do it. Now, Rosemary, do you disagree with that?
I don't know how you ignore it, but I do know that it's a deception, and the press needs to deal with it in a different way. Those tweets are intended to keep us from looking at things that we should, just like the doling out of the announcements on the cabinet are intended to keep us enthralled to him rather than independently looking into matters.
But that's politics, right? I mean, we've talked about wag the dog for years. If you watch what I'm doing over here and spin the plates while I do this over there. I mean, that's part of the game. But I don't know how you dismiss the words coming out of however they're disseminated, the words of a president or a president-elect.
I think that it's time that we look for different ways because the technology is different now than it used to be when those rules that have become rules got into place.
Well, but Rosemary, if he tells a mendaciousness, if he tells a lie, he's always called on them. Always by the press. They always say, that's a lie.
But he never said it. So, I mean, so but it doesn't really matter if they call him on his lies because he just keeps lying and he has his own version of the truth and that's what he believes and that's it.
Here's the top story for the New York Times. Trump claims millions, quote, millions voted illegally, comma, citing no evidence. Okay, so that is an example.
Yeah, and that's calling him out on a lie, and it also reinforces the impression that the New York Times liberal media elite hates him.
So what do you do about that?
You don't. You just keep doing it, and you also, New York Times...
But it's
see,
also
they're
responding
not a good example.
But it's responding a tweet. I mean, that's responding to the tweet.
It is. And it's the New York Times looking at the following things: hacking by the Russians and Donald Trump's 500 companies around the world. Is there, and the New York Times might. They have a big enough bench that they can do it all. But most media don't. If you see it on TV, you're not. All you're seeing is a tweet. Donald Trump is setting the entire agenda of the news.
Just to clarify what you just said, in an article that was, I believe, published yesterday, world of potential conflict for a developer president has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 reporters working on it.
Good.
On that byline.
Yeah, and that's the New York Times. Yeah. So, yes. And the New York Times actually does set agenda for a lot of other media.
Sure.
So
they
we'll see.
Absolutely do. But the issue is whether or not the public will value what the press says and does and reports.
Well, they don't. We saw that in the elections.
Right. But we saw that in the election, and it's whether or not, you know, the Washington Post brought down Richard Nixon.
The Washington Post alerted Congress, which then impeached him. After the Watergate stories, the American people voted in Richard Nixon by what was then the largest margin ever for a U.S. president. The press does not work directly. It works indirectly.
Well, indirectly, schmindirectly. The fact is, Libby's right. It was the fact that the Washington Post
did what they did
that led to the Congress, that led to the impeachment.
So the question is whether or not there are any rational Republicans who will read the paper, take what they say as fact, and act on it. That's the question, whether or not the press will still have the importance and the impact that it had prior to Trump being elected.
I've gone back into Eastern European mode, and the press can't hope for that. All it can do is do its job. Just put the truth out there and set the record straight so it's there eventually. They cannot make people act. That's called the journalism of outrage, where that's the way it's supposed to work, that you tell people the truth and they rise up and demand change. It has never really, really happened, except in cases like involving sex and food. Like
and
the,
what about
in the Philippines? I mean, you're going to just say I'm on my throne again, Alan, but it isn't true that the press got the people to do anything about Watergate. It was Democrats and Congress who then impeached
him. I think for the Washington Post, none of that domino would never have fallen. I'm sorry. I think the press has an incredibly important role to play.
I find it very
interesting that here I am, the flack, the spinster, arguing with you, the spin master, arguing with you.
I'm not a spinster.
But you know what I mean? The spin person arguing with you.
It's a mechanical thing. It's not like the people were so outraged by what they read in the press that they demanded a change. It was the press brought it to the attention of Congress, which then acted. That's why you do investigative reporting in a place like Bosnia and nothing happens, because the government never acts on what it sees there. And it will never happen in this country either, unless the representatives act on what's in the press. And I don't see that happening. See any brave people like the Watergate Committee?
Well,
does that mean we're totally doomed?
No. Megan says, the brilliant Megan says, I'm not too well versed in politics, but doesn't the Electoral College and gerrymandering hold the same purpose, so a voice other than the majority can be heard? All right.
Gerrymandering doesn't work for the minority. It works for
the majority.
The status quo.
It does not.
Party in power gets to decide where the gerrymandered lines are, and that keeps them in power.
Well, okay. So let me give you an example. The New York State, New York is an overwhelmingly blue state. We say to the New York State Senate, go ahead, draw your line so that you can't lose. And they do.
Right.
And they do. The Republicans in New York State are in a distinct minority, and yet, by using the great computers that they have, they can draw lines where they can't lose. So, what can I tell you? That's a pretty good example of how the minority stays in power, right? All right.
Status quo, yeah.
Not status quo. I mean, it's disgusting. If it was fair, if there was a fair fight, which the federal courts assured, by the way, the last time we elected congressional people in New York State, they drew the lines and districts changed. Okay, so here we go. Molly says, so sorry, Alan, but you are wrong. Not that your argument was sexist, but it was ad hominem. Please pardon the sexism of that phrase. But I didn't invent it. Read the Electoral College. We should remember that it was designed because the men who wrote the plan to begin with didn't want democracy. They planted many obstacles in its path, the Senate, among other things, as well as the college. Well, you know, Molly, I don't think we're on such different places. To be honest with you, I think that's exactly what happened. But that's why we should be looking at this very clearly right now. And then Janet says, your thoughts on the 1125 letter to water protectors at Standing Rock by the Army Corps of Engineers saying protesters will be removed 12-5 and the 12-4 planned veteran EMT fire police muster planned to defend the protesters. Please speak to this incredible event unfolding in North Dakota. Janet from Ulster Park. We have spoken of it many times. What else can we do except read your letter?
Well, it's coming to a head, and that's very scary. I think some people could end up getting hurt at Standing Rock, and I don't understand why they have to over a pipeline. That why can't we talk about it and figure this out? And it's one more example in which the United States government does not keep its deals with Native Americans.
You're right.
The pipeline was changed to the current location that insults and has inflamed Native Americans because residents of Bismarck didn't want it through their area. We got to figure out a way to do it. And I really wish that Barack Obama, who's still in charge, would do something about this.
Well,
like call off the Army Corps of Engineer to begin with.
It's clear to me that this is not something that he disagrees with.
Yeah, but he isn't doing anything about it. He said, oh, we're going to sit down and talk about it. But now the Army Corps of Engineers is saying, get out by December 5th or we'll move in because we have to protect property.
They're not saying that if the President of the United States was disagreeing with them.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
That's what I got, Joe.
All right. Let's move on to another topic, and which I will bring up as soon as my machine allows me to.
The race for 2020?
Yes, that's right. The race for 20. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Yes. Aren't you very nice?
I keep trying.
I just can't bring this up. But anyway, the race for 2020 brings us to, I don't know, are we ready? My question that I was going to ask you is, are we ready for that discussion yet?
Well, I think, I for one, think that it's one of the most important discussions that we can have, and that the Democrats have to regroup and get their act together and find somebody who can speak to the large swath of the country. But just as important, if not more important, is to come up with the messaging and the commitment to reach out to the Rust Belt, to talk about the economic inequality, to take what Bernie was talking about and integrated into the identity politics that is so key to the Democratic Party, and make it work together so that in 2020 they can have a candidate and a candidacy that will win.
So this...
Because let me just say one other thing. Because the people who voted for Trump, who think they're going to get their coal jobs back in West Virginia or their industrial jobs back wherever, they're getting screwed with their pants on. And that's exactly what's going to happen. And in 4 years from now, they're going to be angry that this didn't happen, that they didn't get what they were told.
If they're not deluded by a very sophisticated communications machine that's going to make infrastructure look like a jobs program.
Except that it's going to be they're going to be their checkbook's not going to change any. And women, single women, are going to be taxed at a higher rate. I'm going to get taxed at a higher rate as a married woman without children that we can put on our taxes anymore. I mean, we're not. Things are not going to be as he says. It's whether or not people are going to recognize it.
So the names being bandied about very early, just what, 3 weeks after the election. Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey,
who is described in many places as the leading candidate,
yeah,
a national figure.
Yeah, well, I've seen it as the leading candidate.
Absolutely,
yes. Yeah.
The front runner.
Yeah.
Right. And he could be. He's, you know, the second coming, as they said in the paper, the second coming of Obama in a way where that could actually work. I think we are more likely to once again elect a man of color in this country than we are a woman.
Well, wait a second. Wait a second. To be fair, all men of color and all women are not the same. Right. So Hillary Clinton, people didn't like Hillary Clinton for a number of different reasons.
So name a woman they would like.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, this article says
Senator Gillibrand is positioning herself to run for president.
Maybe the most logical heir to Clinton in the 2020 field, but it remains to be seen whether that is a good thing. When Obama chose Clinton to be Secretary of State, Kirsten Gillibrand was appointed to her Senate seat in New York and then won two subsequent elections to hold the seat thanks to rock star level fundraising. According to the New York Post, Gillibrand is already feeling out some of Clinton's major donors about what comes next for the party. At 49, she is one of a handful of women primed to be the next generation of female leaders for the Democrats.
Well, I mean, from the Democrats, I think we may even be more likely to see a Republican candidate, woman candidate, including, what's her name, who's now UN ambassador from South Carolina.
Nikki Haley.
Nikki Haley, right.
Could be.
But who's missing from this article?
Go ahead.
Andrew Cuomo.
Right.
Well, yeah, but I have no... Look, I know Andrew Cuomo pretty well. I'm a student of Andrew Cuomo, and I can tell you right now, he's up there, the lights are on.
Oh, yeah.
The smoke is coming out of his head, and he and his... I remember back in the day, one of his closest friends said to me, you think he's all done now because of the great... scuffle with, you know, the Kennedy lady and all of the rest of that. And the answer is he is not. He's going to be governor. And this guy never stops. He never stops.
He's a phoenix. Oh, great.
Yeah, there's being a report that there's an active shooter alert being issued on the campus of Ohio State University. And there are being tweets that are coming out from the Ohio State University Emergency Management Department, and so details are scarce, but that is breaking news at this hour. Just to clarify, and of course we'll have more on that during the newscast throughout
the week. We should say CNN is reporting.
Yes. well, yeah, I mean, the tweet is from OSU.
But let's have concealed carry in every state, as Mr. Trump wants.
I just want to quickly clarify the other names on the list. Senator-elect Kamala, is that correct?
Yeah.
Kamala Harris, who is in California.
Rich Honan believes she'll be a woman president.
Governor John Hickenlooper of Colorado, who, among many other things, is a brewer. And came to fame of revitalizing Denver, Colorado.
He should win just because of his name.
Yeah,
there a guy in
a good name.
Wasn't there a guy named Hickenlooper in one of the sitcoms, early sitcoms?
I don't know.
Yeah, somebody will write. Yeah, there was.
All right.
What else you got?
First Lady Michelle Obama. Which never run for office and doesn't seem to have any interest in running for office, but yet the name is on the list, I assume, because of the...
Because she's one of the most popular people in the world, and because she has guts, and because she would be a great president.
And she gave the best two political speeches of the whole cycle.
Right. And by the way, we're on this earth for a short time. And while she says she'll never do it and the rest of it, you never know.
Right.
And the other one, and help me with the name here, Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota.
Right.
Also on the list.
She's a big one. And people at this event I went to last night, people talked about Tammy Duckworth.
Ah.
Who was just nominated, or
right.
just elected.
Just
rather.
Elected. She beat Mark Kirk in Illinois because he was so rude to her.
Well, and that was pretty well predicted.
Yeah. So, but he was incredibly rude. And it cost him. His racism and his snideness definitely cost him in that election.
All right. We are out of time, but thank you very much for being with us. Thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Libby. We'll be back tomorrow for another edition of the panel, and we'll continue with the roundtable after this short break.